Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The long legal battle between Maryland and supporters of its historically black universities and colleges is back in federal court today. More than a decade ago, alumni and advocates for the HBCUs complained that Maryland had failed to correct vestiges of racial segregation in its higher education system. The coalition alleged Maryland has underfunded its historically black institutions and allowed other state schools to duplicate their programs, draining students away from the HBCUs. More than 3 years ago, U.S. District Court Judge Catherine Blake sent the parties off to negotiate a settlement to redress what she called, quote, a shameful history of de jure segregation, end quote, at the four universities, Morgan State, Coppin State, Bowie State, and UMES, the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. But the parties haven't been able to agree, so today they're coming back to court. Joining me from a studio in Washington, D.C. to talk about the trial is John Greenbaum, chief counsel at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, a party to the case. Welcome to On the Record.
Hi, Sheila. Happy to be here.
So refresh us on how this lawsuit began, what the basis for it is.
Well, Sheila, if you go back to why the HBCUs were created in Maryland and in other places, they were created as part of the idea of separate but equal, and they were created to be originally institutions where black college students could go because they could not go to traditionally white institutions. And so one of the things that happened as part of that is that you had completely dual curriculums. All their curricula was basically copied, and that's the way it existed through Brown versus Board of Education, which struck down separate but equal schools, not just for K through 12 schools, but also
universities.
Maryland, over time, failed to dismantle its policy of having a dual system of programming so that HBCUs don't have the opportunity to offer unique programs that attract students of all races. And so they continue to be segregated. Only about 5% of the students at Maryland's HBCUs today are white. One of the things that's interesting is there was a period of time, particularly in the 1970s, where Maryland's HBCUs were able to attract more white students, that the average across those schools was about 16%. And that was a short window of time in which the HBCUs had some unique programs. But one of the things that happened was those programs were duplicated by the traditionally white institutions. So the judge found that there was a constitutional violation because Maryland had continued this policy of having a dual system of programming. That's what the court found in 2013. As you said, she ordered us to mediation for a couple of years. That mediation was fruitless. Maryland never offered a legitimate settlement offer. The parties have since submitted proposals to the court. Court said of Maryland's proposal that it was insufficient and inadequate, rejected a couple pieces of our proposal, but said that other parts of it were promising. And so we're going to trial to discuss how best for Maryland to fix this constitutional problem.
I know this is a case that's more than a decade old, so this may be an oversimplistic question, but what do the plaintiffs hope to achieve?
What the plaintiffs hope to achieve is the creation of programmatic niches or programmatic areas at the HBCUs to develop certain areas of strength at these HBCUs so that they have some distinctive areas that are high-quality areas that are able to attract students of all races. And that over time, this will go a long way to giving the HBCUs more of an identity other than a racial identity and will enable them to compete and attract students of all races.
So you talked about the low percent of white students at HBCUs. You just talked about an identity other than a racial identity. I think many listeners think that's what I thought an HBCU was about, was racial identity, a safe space where black students would be among other black students in a college with that heritage. maybe many of us don't understand your view of what an HBCU should be.
Well, Maryland itself has described HBCUs as having a dual purpose. And part of that mission is the historical mission, going back to the days of Separate But Equal, of providing education to African American students. But beyond that, they have missions as universities. Each one on paper does talk about what it is that they are and what it is that they aspire to do beyond being historically black colleges. But the idea is they really haven't had the opportunity to fully exercise their identity as a full-fledged university beyond their racial identity. And I think the point you make, the perception point, is an important one here. It's one of the things that creates a challenge that HBCUs have in attracting students of all races, is both kind of the perception and the stigma of being thought of as being African American universities. And that's something that they have to overcome in terms of attracting students of all races. And if you talk to the presidents of each of the four HBCUs, they're very proud of their identity as HBCUs, but they only see that as being part of their identity, and they're all seeking to attract a diverse student body.
That's John Greenbaum, chief counsel at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. The Lawyers Committee is part of the coalition supporting historically black universities, which is challenging vestiges of racial segregation in Maryland's system of higher education. So the coalition wants to transfer 11 programs from other state schools to HBCUs, launch 13 joint degree programs, and add almost 50 degree programs. Critics might argue that's a dramatic change in the university system to benefit only a few schools.
Well, first of all, Maryland has to undo the system that they've created. One of the things that the court noted in her 2013 opinion was that Maryland had made a commitment to create 25 new programs at the HBCUs back then, and that it failed to do so. In 2000, Maryland entered an agreement with the United States Department of Education to create new and unique programs at the HBCUs, and that they failed to do so. And you can go back over and over in Maryland's history and find instances in which these Blue Ribbon panels said that you've got to create new, unique programs at HBCUs and create distinctive identities. Now, when it comes to developing programs at the traditionally white institutions, Maryland has made those sorts of investments. In the past, in terms of, you can go back to the creation of UMBC in the 1960s, when you had a whole bunch of universities in Baltimore and they created another one. The University of Baltimore was a private university and it was failing in the 1970s, and the state took it over and took over all the expense of doing that, despite a Blue Ribbon panel saying that that was going to harm universities like Coppin State and Morgan State. And then even if you look at the legislation last year, the Maryland legislature passed legislation to create a strategic partnership between University of Maryland Baltimore and College Park, as well as to provide more funding to other traditionally white institutions, UMBC and Towson. And the Maryland legislature says that in the next 5 years, that is going to cost the state $86 million. And then it appears that it will be an additional $30 million for each year after that. So the state has done a lot to invest in the TWIs.
And traditionally the state white also, institutions.
Yes, the traditionally white institutions. So the state needs to put some investment into the historically black colleges and universities in terms of creating programs. So we think that what we put out there is reasonable. In a lot of ways, we're very careful to not disrupt the system too much. But at the same time, the court found unconstitutional racial discrimination here. and Maryland has got to fix it.
So how much money is at stake here?
Well, it's hard to say. It's certainly going to be more than a few dollars because, as you've mentioned, we've proposed the creation of a number of programs. We've proposed the transfer of some others. One of the things that we would have to do is work with the administration and the faculty of these schools to come up with some precise estimates. Because one of the things that happens when you create a new program is there's some expense that comes with that. But also as the program develops, there's revenue that comes in with that. You know, to begin with, you have tuition revenue. Beyond that, if it's a graduate or doctorate program, there may be research dollars that are able to come in with the creation of a new program. So it's hard to say what the exact amount is. And of course, it will, in the first instance, depend on what the judge orders as to what the price tag's going to be.
We talk about predominantly white institutions, PWIs, but the University of Baltimore and UMBC are among the most diverse schools in the nation, and both have black presidents. Why is it a good idea to transfer programs from an institution that already serves many African Americans to transfer a degree program to an HBCU?
The idea is that you want to create greater student diversity at the HBCUs, which currently don't have that type of student diversity. So the point about taking some programs that attract students of all races and bringing them to the HBCUs, it's not like we chose some programs randomly and had them move over to the HBCUs, but we chose programs that already fit well within what the schools themselves see as areas of strength that could be dramatically expanded by bringing in new programs or transferred programs. That's a better alternative than to have programs at both schools, which is sort of what got Maryland in trouble in the first place.
What is wrong with allowing competition between schools?
Well, the first thing is it's inefficient, because what you're doing is when something could be at one school, you're having the same thing duplicated in multiple schools that are geographically close together. So there's an inefficiency in terms of doing that. And you also have the racial component. How the HBCU started was with the idea of, okay, white students go to the TWIs, black students go to the HBCUs. We set up dual curricula between the two schools, with frankly the HBCUs having an inferior curricula compared to, why not be more efficient in terms of how you do things? Don't create up dual systems. And frankly, what happens, you know, this is not only true in Maryland, but in a lot of other places, is that white students will not go to the HBCU. They'll go to the traditionally white institution if both schools offer the same programs. So what you're further doing is you're further segregating students by race.
On this point of attracting students of all races, some studies have found that black graduates of HBCUs are more likely to thrive after graduation than their peers at predominantly white institutions. Would the value of black students find in an HBCU be diluted if the student body became more white?
I think it would be supplemented. I don't think any of us would expect that any of the HBCUs in Maryland are going to become majority white. We're only talking about 5% white across all the campuses. So they're still going to remain institutions that are going to remain majority African American. On the other hand, I think we all benefit when we're educated in environments in which we are getting a diversity of views. So I think that just adds to the educational experience. In addition to that, if these institutions become noted for particular areas of study in their schools, whether the students are African American, white, Latino, Asian, students that get degrees in those programs, it's going to help them in the job market going forward.
How does the situation regarding HBCUs in Maryland compare to what's happening in other states?
I mean, a lot of other states have had similar problems. You know, one of the things that's interesting was that at the trial, the judge found that the issue of program duplication was worse in Maryland than it was in Mississippi 20 years ago, you know, which is pretty surprising when you think about it.
Now that you're back in court, do you have any sense of what the timeline will be for a resolution of this case?
We're probably going to be going for a while. I mean, the trial itself will last from 4 to 6 weeks, and I doubt whether we'll get a decision at that point. And the judge will probably want additional briefing papers that we'll file after the trial. She'll take a certain amount of time to decide. And then after that, let's say that we get the remedy that we propose. It's not all going to happen on the first day. You're not going to be able to create a large number of programs on day one. So that process is going to take a number of years. And we expect that the state will appeal the case and appeal it until they'll run out of appeals.
I appreciate your walking us through it. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Sheila.
John Greenbaum is chief counsel at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law and co-counsel in this HBCU case in Maryland. The Lawyers Committee is part of the Coalition of Alumni and Advocates for Historically Black Universities, challenging vestiges of racial segregation in the Maryland system of higher education. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Quick break now, and when we come back, we'll hear from someone with a different perspective on the HBCU case. Stay with us. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the long legal battle between Maryland and a coalition supporting its historically black universities and colleges, HBCUs. More than a decade ago, alumni and advocates for the HBCUs complained that the state had failed to correct vestiges of racial segregation in its higher education system. The coalition alleged Maryland has underfunded its historically black institutions and allowed other state schools to duplicate their academic programs, draining students away from the HBCUs. The parties are back in federal court today after 3 years of failed efforts to negotiate a settlement. Before the break, we heard from a lawyer representing the plaintiffs. Now we turn to Laszlo Boyd. Laszlo Boyd has written columns for the Daily Record and the Center Maryland blog, among other publications, and he joins us by phone from his home along with his poodle Bichon Kramer. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you, Sheila.
You have been critical of the plaintiff's requests in this case. What are your objections to what they're asking for?
I think they're overreaching in a number of ways. Let me suggest two dilemmas that I see. One of them is that the plaintiff's case is built on trying to improve the situation for HBCUs rather than for students of color. When the system of segregated schools existed, a black student couldn't get into a white institution. Now they're eagerly pursued in all of them. So there's a different kind of impact. This seems to be about institutions, not about students. The second issue that I see is the impact that a far-reaching remedial action and that what the plaintiffs are asking for is to transfer wholesale lots of successful programs from historically white institutions to historically black institutions. The dilemma is that there's no evidence that that works. It would be incredibly disruptive to what are some very successful, highly enrolled programs. There's no evidence that if you switch them, it will maintain the same level of quality, nor necessarily attract students to come.
What measures do you think the state should take here? Should it stop predominantly white institutions from offering the same programs that...
I think the standard that has been used for talking about duplication is much too broad. It seems to me that you've got, in the 25 years since higher education was reorganized in Maryland, a highly successful system of colleges and universities that's one of the state's real positive assets. I think if you start pulling programs out of one university and putting them into the other, you create all sorts of unintended consequences. Do the faculty come with it? Does the reputation come with it? You can't assure any of that. So I think it's very disruptive. I think what makes much more sense is to build up the programs that exist at HBCUs and give them the resources they need. And for the most part, they're pretty well resourced. I think the other thing you can do is explore some collaborative programs between different institutions. I think the third thing you can do, which has happened a good bit in the last 10 years, is give them new programs. They've been much more successful and had had a much higher rate of approval of new programs than the historically white institutions. So I think there are things that you can do to build those institutions without creating damage to other ones.
As former professor, former acting secretary of higher education, Laszlo Boyd, here on The Record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're talking about the legal challenge of state higher ed policies by advocates for Maryland's four HBCUs, historically black institutions. Our guest in the first part of the show, John Greenbaum from the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, pointed out that if the same degree program is available at both an HBCU and a traditionally white institution, most white students will choose the traditionally white institution. Isn't that a problem?
It depends on the program. I think that's way too sweeping a generalization. For one thing, there are lots of programs for which there is enough demand that you don't want to have them just in a single institution. You want to have them in more than one. A second dilemma with that is the black institution has to create a welcoming environment, or it's not going to get majority students anyway. It's not merely having the degree there. It is complicated. I don't think there are simple solutions to it, but I think the potential for saying, let's take an engineering program from University A and put it at HBCU B, the mechanics of implementing that are almost unimaginable, and I suspect they'll be unimaginable to the courts.
The legal case itself, I don't know, but I assume it has cost millions of dollars, or will.
I'm sure it has. I have no idea, but yes.
In your view, why didn't the state find a way to settle and move on to some of these cooperative avenues that you described? Why has this been such a pitched battle?
I think that the HBCUs and the plaintiffs in the case had a much more ambitious set of goals beyond collaborative programs. You had 3 years of negotiations and neither party budged. When I say neither party did. It wasn't just this state. So I think you've got a situation in which the objectives are so fundamentally incompatible that mediation doesn't work.
I appreciate your insights. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Laszlo Boyd, former professor, former acting secretary of higher education, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Kast. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow.